why the Fed is also monitoring the trade war. I'm David Brancaccio in New York in what's being read as a conciliatory gesture in the U.S.-China trade war. There are published reports today that China bought a good amount of U.S. soybeans over the last day. That's a positive sign for U.S. farmers, but there's a lot to make up with that market nearly drying up last month. Then there was a report this week China might back away from some of its Made in China 2025 plans. Market players have been hanging on every syllable of these hints about maybe easing tensions. Presumably, the most powerful single economic policymaker in the country is also watching this, the chairman of the Federal Reserve, Jerome Powell. Now, his team meets on interest rates next week. Let's consult, as we do on Thursdays, Diane Swonk, the chief economist at the tax and advisory firm Grant Thornton.
Well, the uncertainty we've seen plague global financial markets has not fallen on deaf ears at the Fed. The important thing for the Fed is what ultimately comes of trade. My sense is that we're kicking the can down the road, and it's very hard to get where we need to go in the short time frame that's out there with China, given the complexities of our relationship with China. You know, the Fed will take welcome news as it gets it. That's really important to understand from the Fed's perspective, that they're basically putting rates at a place that still is just trying to bring them up to normal. That said, it's very important that Chairman Powell will now look to be much more flexible on rate hikes going forward, because they do know the economy is slowing. They don't think it's slowing down too rapidly to derail it yet, but they want to be flexible to deal with whatever comes in 2019.
I mean, that's the big shift late this fall in the Fed's thinking. They don't see storm clouds, but it's not quite the sunny weather that we'd been living through.
Exactly. And one of the things we saw actually at the November minutes was a real shift in their debate on everything from mounting corporate debt, trade wars, tariffs, and some of the uncertainty that we see out there and what that was doing to investment. But there's more uncertainty at a time when you would usually think uncertainty would be going down. Why do we care about that? Well, uncertainty causes hesitation.
All right. Well, some of these jitters have contributed to the volatility that we've seen on markets. Diane Swonk at the tax and advisory firm Grant Thornton. Thank you.
Thank you.
The lame duck Congress, in a rare spasm of bipartisanship, is set to agree on criminal justice reform. Enough votes are pledged, with a vote in the Senate likely by year's end. Among its many provisions, the bill would shift thousands of federal inmates into transitional programs like halfway houses. Marketplace's Ben Bradford reports.
Current prison inmates who've demonstrated good behavior or undergone job training or counseling programs could retroactively accrue various early release credits, making many suddenly eligible to stay supervised but out of prison. Or at least that's the idea.
We were very concerned that you might have a number of people who are eligible for pre-release custody, one of which is halfway houses, but wouldn't have a place to go.
Sakira Cook directs the Leadership Conference on Civil and Human Rights, which supports the bill. The Justice Department estimated 2 years ago halfway houses were over 100% full, before cuts last year.
Currently, we have a serious shortage.
Jessica Jackson of Cut 50, a criminal justice group, she says the current bill requires prison officials to find transitional housing for eligible inmates.
They have to have the contracts to do so.
That could also mean shifting more people to home confinement, currently used as a first option only about 4% of the time. I'm Ben Bradford for Marketplace.
Marketplace is more than a radio program. As a nonprofit news organization, we strive to provide a public service that fulfills a vital mission. Now is the time to show that you value what you learn from Marketplace. Invest in the news you trust, and your donation will go twice as far, thanks to our friends at Candida. Give today at marketplace.org and keep reliable, independent journalism going strong. Thank you.
Hey there, I'm Bridget, co-host of Million Bazillion, Marketplace's podcast for kids about money. I want to tell you about our email newsletter course, Million Bazillion Academy. In this new and improved course, we'll help your kids learn about crypto, credit cards, and inflation in just 6 weeks. Each lesson comes with a podcast episode, a fun cartoon, discussion questions, and an activity that lets kids apply what they're learning in the real world. You can start at any time and work at your own pace. Sign up today at marketplace.org/academy.
The bowl games in football this time of year are rewards for a winning season. They also help the return on investment that colleges have made in their sports facilities. And it's not just the big teams. Lesser-known NCAA Division II programs are also spending on infrastructure, as KCUR's Greg Eklund reports.
Missouri Western and St. Joseph changed the Division II landscape with major upgrades to its athletic facilities. Before the Griffins Football Stadium video scoreboard was built 4 years ago, athletic officials there said it was going to be the biggest in Division II. Athletic Director Josh Looney.
Pound for pound, you can put us up against anybody in the country and our athletic department facility-wise.
The cost of the scoreboard was more than $2 million, paid for by donors. But that claim about being the biggest in Division II, it was short-lived because Grand Valley State in Michigan announced an even bigger one only 12 days later. Closer to home, Missouri Western's biggest rival is a short drive north. Northwest Missouri in Maryville just opened a brand new $20 million indoor practice facility. It was funded by the university, the town, and private donors. Mel Churchma, Northwest's retired Hall of Fame football coach, says the polished look attracts the best players.
It's kind of like the Division I's. You know, you have to keep up with the Joneses, and so that's what we're trying to do.
Bearcats football teams have won 6 national championships. 2 seasons ago, the football and men's basketball teams became the first in Division II history to win national titles in the same academic year. Churchma says it puts the school on the map.
Well, you can say what you want, but I think Northwest Missouri State right now is probably known more for football and men's basketball than anything else.
Though facility upgrades mostly rely on outside funding, Missouri Western's overall athletic operating budget was more than $5 million last year. That falls in line with the Division II average, according to NCAA figures. It's a far cry from the $100 million-plus for top college teams, but the biggest chunk still goes into football. In St. Joseph, Missouri, I'm Greg Eklund for Marketplace.
And in New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. We're from APM, American Public Media.
Hey there, I'm Bridget, co-host of Million Bazillion, Marketplace's podcast for kids about money. I want to tell you about our email newsletter course, Million Bazillion Academy. In this new and improved course, we'll help your kids learn about crypto, credit cards, and inflation in just 6 weeks. Each lesson comes with a podcast episode, a fun cartoon, discussion questions, and an activity that lets kids apply what they're learning in the real world. You can start at any time and work at your own pace. Sign up today at marketplace.org/academy.